Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and happy holidays. Thanks for joining our show tonight. I think we're in for a delightful episode. The topic tonight is The Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth, and our guest tonight is Ellen Tadd. We're going to bring Ellen on in just a minute, but I wanted to take a moment and talk about this curious thing called life, this human demeanor, this persona that we all have. I mean, you're listening to the show, and I'm speaking the show, and we're having this co-creation, so to speak, of this moment, I mean, in a very simple sense, and then we can take a real big step back and look at humanity and look at the storyline that humanity's going through and see quite a different snapshot of what it means to have a human experience. In other words, the individual experience and then the collective experience. What I like about our show tonight is we're going to talk in depth about life on Earth as a human being. And I just love bringing on all the perspectives, the viewpoints, the understandings, the insights of all the guests we've had on the show. We're coming up on our 200th episode here at the beginning of the year, and I tell you, it's been quite a ride. It's for me, the excitement, the joy, there's a deep sense of satisfaction for me to search out people who have really did some inner perception, inner perspective, soul searching, if you will, asking themselves the deep questions about life, and then they turn around, they share that with you. And then over many different guests and many different perspectives, we start to get a deeper and deeper understanding of what it means to be human in this storyline. I think there's a real sense of value, a sense of, I guess, satisfaction, if you will, a sense of fulfillment, if you will, to kind of tune in or hone in on that soul's perception of what your life was intended to be, your life purpose, if you will. And when you turn around, you honor that, when you show up for that, when you hone in on that, and then you turn around and fulfill it, it's kind of a 1-2-3 punch of satisfaction, where your heart feels good because you honored your passion, your soul feels good because you're fulfilling your life purpose, and your ego feels good because there's a, like I was saying, there's something about showing up for your life purpose in an intentional way and really honing in on that. So I think our guest tonight has done that really well. The topic tonight is the title of her latest book, The Infinite View, A Guidebook for Life on Earth, This Life on This Earth. Ellen is an internationally known clairvoyant counselor who has been teaching and counseling for more than 40 years. She is widely respected for the integrity of her work, the accuracy of her perceptions and guidance, and the clarity and usefulness for her teachings. Her work has been supported by the Edgar Cayce Foundation, the Marian Institute, Deepak Chopra, Child Spirit Institute, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and the Boston Center for Adult Education. Join me in welcoming Ellen to the show. Welcome to the show, Ellen.
Thank you. Thank you, Les. It's great to be with you this evening.
You know, when I looked over your book, there was such a kind of an organic view of it. I felt like I was sharing part of your life. Can you share with us what brought you to this this life journey of yours of writing books about the essence of life on Earth?
Well, the watershed event for me was that my mother came back and talked to me after she died. I was 19 at the time, so it happened quite a while ago now. And I was raised by my father, who was a scientist, a physicist. I was raised with no organized religion. And I was a very sensitive child. I saw things in the dark. I had out-of-body experiences. I tried to explain to my father what was happening to me, and he thought I had a vivid imagination. He took me to an electron microscope to show me what molecules look like, because I told him I could see molecules, but then I saw I wasn't seeing molecules. I was seeing energy around people. So I felt quite confused as a child by my sensitivity, and it wasn't until my mother came back and talked to me that I began to relax and to recognize that my sensitivity to the spiritual world actually was a gift rather than a problem. And then very soon after that awakening, I started to have experiences and visitations with beings from the spiritual world who are teachers and magnificent beings who helped me to learn. They trained me how to be a sensitive in an insensitive world, and they helped me to have what I call a multidimensional life. I teach others what they have taught me. It's both profound and practical. And my book, The Infinite View, contains some of the stories of my own discovery and also what I teach my students.
What really struck me about your book is, from my perspective, you really were careful about how you took on information. Like your guides would give you an understanding of a particular aspect of our human demeanor, and you didn't just take it verbatim. It was more like you were pointed in a direction, and then you had to go figure it out for yourself. The book really has a very grounded view of the principles that you talk about. So for your
father, go
ahead.
Yes, I was just going to say that because I was raised by a physicist, a scientist, I think it impacted my approach to my experiences, where my father was a physicist and I think of myself as a metaphysicist. So I approached my experiences in a very methodical way and really saw my life as an experiment. So if I was given certain information, then I had what I call my imaginary shelf, where I put the experience on the shelf until life has confirmed it. I know that it's not always easy to know what is true. And I've had experiences where I have very vivid voices or visions, but I still misinterpret it. So it's not so easy to know what is true, and therefore, even with dramatic experiences, I look for confirmation in my interpretation. And through many years of scrutinizing subtlety and nuance and detail, it's really served me in developing accuracy.
Yeah, in the book you talked about, in one part you talked about imagination and intuition when it comes to getting answers to questions, and how the ego perhaps can conjure up an imagination of what the answer, quote, should be, unquote, from the ego's perspective. And then that's what I like about your book. It's that discernment that well, wait a minute. Just because I'm getting this information doesn't mean I've understood it correctly. And that's what I like about your approach in learning and integrating these teachings into your own understanding. You wanted to really know that you've interpreted it correctly, and I just like that consistent vigilance, if you will, that says, okay, maybe I don't know, let's look closer, maybe I'm a little off here, let's look closer. And that discernment, I think, over time is what can differentiate people who are just parroting what they've been taught and people who have learned it at a much more organic level.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I feel that experiential knowing is a very important component. How do you know when you know? And, you know, people have very strong convictions, but the flip side of convictions is openness. So I don't say that I know the truth, but I have strong convictions, and I know that with openness, as my awareness grows, my convictions will evolve. And so through the years, certain convictions have stayed steady and others have evolved. And I think that when learning is seen as primary, then it's all right that we don't know the answer. You know, it's the practice of medicine, the practice of law, the practice of psychology. Everyone's learning. And when people get insecure, then they start clinging to the fact that they have the answer, and that blocks the continuation of the learning process. So I've been very fortunate to have wonderful and dramatic spiritual experiences, but I'm just as much the student as I am the teacher.
I like that. I like the notion of holding what I know with a feather, holding what I know. Or another perception I like is my unknowing mind knows so much more than my knowing mind. In other words, there's so much to the universe that our culture can't even put language to that is an inherent part of the universe, and we're just in the dark.
I love meditation, really deep meditation. Gives you the ability to access knowing beyond the analytical mind.
Right, I like that. Well, so if we think about our life path as these sequences of life incarnations of a sequence of topics or lessons, if you will, that our soul goes through. And then we turn around and we look at this life right here. Here I am, flesh and bones. How does that bigger perception of a soul going through multiple lifetimes, how can having a deeper understanding of that much bigger perception help me in this lifetime with this lifetime's issues and questions and struggles?
Well, my guides who've been my teachers talk about the fact that we are all spirit, we have a soul, and a personality. They define the spirit as a spark of the God force that exists in each of us, and each spirit is the only constant. Every other aspect of ourselves is evolving, but our spirit is constant and simple. And each spirit has an individual emphasis. One spirit may emphasize creativity, another wisdom, another nurturing. Whatever our particular spiritual essence is, it's our particular nature. It's our instrument in the orchestra of life. And then over the spirit is the soul, And the soul is the container of the spirit that allows the spirit to have individuality and animation. And the soul is very complicated. It contains all of our past life patterns, traumas, talents, fears, and skills that have accumulated through all of the many lives we've lived. And in the soul, there's a concept that I call first error, or the original attitude that was not in harmony with our spiritual nature. In Christianity, they call it original sin, but I found that it's not the same for everyone. We have our own brand of fear and confusion, so I call it first error. And when we incarnate, we're guided towards families and circumstance that bring up this lesson, this process of evolution. We all get set up to grow. And then over the soul is our personality, which is influenced by genetics and then conditioning from parents, society, and education. Typical psychology stops there. And then I add past life influences, and then influence from the spiritual essence. My guides say that fulfillment is when our spiritual essence, our deepest nature, is manifested at the personality level with consistency. So that's felt and expressed and manifested. And this is key because culturally we're taught that fulfillment comes from getting what we want. And if we don't get what we want, we feel sad or mad or hurt. If we shift it and realize that fulfillment is self-actualization, then the focus is on how are we being. It's unfortunate to me that we have a culture that has defined happiness as getting what we want, because I don't know anyone who gets everything they want, and what this has done is bred a very unhappy culture. So the ability to see that we are spirit on the earth temporarily, I have found to be life-altering. And, you know, I was able to watch my son incarnate. I write about that in one of my chapters, where I met him in etheric form before he was born, and then his etheric form dissolved and a beam of white light entered into the new child, and then in a couple of hours he was born. So I've actually clairvoyantly seen the process of life before birth and life after death. So I know a lot of people talk about these things, but because I've actually seen the process clairvoyantly, I feel quite confident. And so the question I think that everyone should ask is, why am I here? What am I to learn? And what am I to contribute? It's different for everyone. And also, how can we enjoy the gift of life, the physical senses, the inner actions, and the process of learning? So, you know, this is, I give some details in my book about how to learn to identify what an individual spiritual essence is, and also what can help to identify first errors. And in a kind of broad brush way, if people ask, what is my deepest fear, and really listen, they can access this understanding of what the deepest lesson is that they're here to work through. And if someone asks, what is my deepest desire, this can help people understand their spiritual nature. So it's really our cultural conditioning that most confuses and makes it hard for people to stay in touch with their purpose.
Well, like I was mentioning while we were chatting before the show started, I've really witnessed some men in my life that have gone into such despair, such sorrow, such deep agony within their own psyche. And if you think of that soul essence, the account you shared of watching your son literally being born, literally incarnating, when you learn that the continuity of life is on both ends of the incarnation as well as the inside of the earth. In other words, our soul essence has continuity regardless of what happens in this lifetime. What would you say, I mean, if people are wrestling with depression, what would you suggest as an antidote to that?
So I spent a couple of decades clairvoyantly watching people's chakras because I wanted to understand human behavior. Chakra means wheel in Sanskrit, and they're seven fundamental energy centers from the top of the head to the base of the spine. And the crown chakra at the top of the head is the center, which is depicted as the golden halo in religious pictures. And this chakra, this energy center, is what I call the key to happiness chakra, because when it's opened and expanded, we feel connected and glad to be alive. And when it's closed, that's depression. And what closes the crown chakra is discouragement and worry. And what opens it is inspiration, trust, and devotion. So these men you're talking about, I'm sure they feel discouraged about a variety of aspects of their life. So I even, you know, feel that in some ways depression is a word that's become very confused by linking it to the pharmaceutical company. But it actually is depression in the aura, where the contraction of the aura through attitude causes a dullness in living. So this is where perception informs feeling, and how people perceive impacts how they perceive about their situation. And in my book, The Infinite View, I have a chapter on the relationship between the gut or the solar plexus chakra and the third eye chakra. And when people live their life in the solar plexus, they become attached to having harmony as defined as how they want things to be. And if they're not the way they want, then they're in turmoil. The third eye chakra is the center of a spiritual view. It's a broader perspective. It's the center of wisdom, which helps you to see the far-reaching impact. And quite literally, it's activated through focus and concentration. And in athletics, they call this the zone. When an athlete is in the zone, that's deep focus. That's looking out of the third eye. And from the third eye, what happens is you stop being attached to outcomes. I've talked to athletes who've experienced the zone, and when they're in the zone, they're not attached to winning. They're in this state. It's really a state of oneness, and it's only activated through focus and concentration. And from that state, they actualize their best. So the turning the situation around from being discouraged because I'm not getting what I want to how do I actualize my best. And my guides say when you're having a hard time, go back to basics. Eat well, exercise, get enough sleep, meditate, activate the third eye, use positive affirmative thoughts, and be proactive. So, you know, the inspiration for the crown is the antidote for depression.
I like that. So you've talked about focus and concentration. In the book, you talk about it as a remedy for anxiety. Can you touch on that?
Yes, so the crown antidotes depression and the third eye antidotes anxiety. So the solar plexus or the gut is very much, it's the center of emotion and feeling. And it's, I liken it to a pond. And anxiety is like the pond being all ripply. It's turmoil. And when we focus, what happens is we accept what is. And anxiety is an absence of acceptance. Acceptance is not complacency. It's simply acknowledging what is because it is. Once we get calm, then we can focus and see, given what is, how do I take the best steps I can? But from this solar plexus turmoil, it's very difficult to have clarity. And, you know, we are what I call a solar plexus dominant culture. Most people live their lives in the gut, and this breeds addiction, anxiety, it fosters depression. It's a big mistake. And one of the things I hope to do is help create a paradigm shift to get people to focus. I'm working with a student, and we're bringing the concept of this third eye into schools, and children move very quickly to become wise sages. It's a very powerful tool, and as my guides say, it's just a pivot away. You shift your focus and you change your emotional state.
Boy, I like that. Well, you've referred to your guides quite a bit. Now, tell us how you interact with them as you go through your day. Do you, like, check in once or twice? And if you're playing cards, do they peek at other people's cards for you? Or?
Well, so it has to do with expanding perception. So there's inner vision and outer vision. So inner vision is the vision we see in our mind's eye. I can ask you, you know, what does your bedroom look like? And in your mind's eye, you can see it, even if you're looking at something with your eyes opened. Outer vision is when everything disappears and a vision replaces what's happening externally. And then there's telepathy, and there's clairaudience, which is communicating through thought spiritually. So they communicate to me in a lot of different forms and a lot of different times. It's not always the same, but it's very woven into everyday life. I mean, sometimes they won't say anything because it's my job to figure it out. But always when I teach, I have a number of guides who come with me. They correct me when I make a mistake. And you know, they are the source of what I teach. I wish I were as smart as they are, because they have come up with extraordinary knowledge, and I've been the recipient. But you see, we all have guides. One of my favorite stories is the story of my father. He told me that when he would start a research project, he would lie in bed, listen to classical music. Well, the classical music, this is my language, inspired him, so that opened his crown chakra. And the crown chakra is the bridge from the material to the spiritual dimension. So in order to access guides, you must have an open crown chakra. And so once he was inspired by the classical music and in his own way meditating or having an absence of thinking, he said that he would receive thoughts. And he knew they weren't his. He said they were given to him. And those thoughts, he didn't know where they were from. But I believe they were from his guides, and then he'd go to the library and research them. And he said they were always the best ideas. Or my brother, who was a musician, would talk about the songs that came through him versus the songs he wrote. So, you know, we all have the ability to access guides, and someone may think they got a really good idea in the shower, but actually the water over their head felt good and inspired them, and then they opened the crown, and then their guide's thoughts got through to them.
So maybe I should install a shower at work right next to my desk.
Well, I think that's very good. I think that's, you know, one of the things they say about Einstein is his best work was done when he would finish his work at his job and then just stare out the window absentmindedly, and that's when his best work came to him.
Right. Yeah, I like that. Well, now, in your book, you talk about choice and destiny, and I think you used an example of stopping at a cafe, and while you were there, you noticed a poster about the Heimlich maneuver, and later on that day, it came into use in your life. Can you tell us how your perception of the idea of destiny and choice and how those two play off each other?
Yes, this is a story that was really powerful for me. It was my daughter's 10th birthday, and I was trying to get home quickly to prepare for a birthday party with my children, and I heard a voice. One of my guides said, "Stop at that cafe for lunch," and I said to myself, "I don't have time to stop for lunch. It's totally impractical." But it was not a suggestion. It was a directive. It was a voice, not a thought. And so I knew I had to do it. So we stopped for lunch. I went to the ladies' room, and washing my hands, I read the poster, which was the Heimlich maneuver poster. And then we ate quickly. We went home. And during the birthday party, all the kids were laughing and at the dining room table. And I was washing dishes, and I felt a tap on my shoulder. I turned around, and my daughter was turning blue. I turned her around instantly, did the Heimlich maneuver, and saved her life. And I know that if I had not just read that poster a couple of hours earlier, I wouldn't have been able to act so quickly without fear. But I had no fear. I just turned around, knew what to do, and saved her life. And so my guides had told me to stop and have lunch there. Well, so after that, I spent a lot of time meditating, thinking, and talking to my guides about the fact that they must have known that I would need the information, that the poster was there at the restaurant, that there was a destiny in the experience. And so then I started talking to my guides about destiny and choice. And what they said is that, you know, some people say you can create your own reality, and other people say life is destined, and those are opposite. So I've been taught that it's a combination of both. Some people have more destiny than others. Some people have more choice than others, and it has to do with our lessons. And it's the most interesting question of all. What is choice and what is destiny? And I think, you know, it's a long conversation, really, but I give a variety of examples in that chapter. And it's important, I think, for people to know, because when something is destined and you're trying to change it, it's a wasted effort. And when you're waiting for destiny and you have to initiate, then you're wasting time. So the discernment is still the key. The attunement is still the key to know when we just need to accept and wait and when we need to charge ahead and initiate.
So do you think that perhaps people get the inclination that they should be teaching, or, I mean, this vision, this inspiration that, well, I'm here to do this, and they'll go to execute that, and just nothing happens. It all falls short. That sometimes our own ego or mind understanding of our destiny doesn't always understand the timing of such things. And do you imagine people get discouraged about trying to fulfill their destiny too soon and kind of give up hope?
Well, there's so many different possibilities. Someone may think something is their destiny, but they might be mistaken. Someone may be very clear about what their purpose and destiny is, but their timing is off. Someone may have a clarity of what their potential is, but they have to put in the work, and it's not going to happen without a lot of work. So there's so many possibilities. And on the other hand, sometimes there's a destiny and things are just handed to someone without any effort at all. So there's a lot of different possibilities, and it's difficult to make a broad generalization. This is why I tell people to strengthen the third eye through focus and concentration and develop the skill of meditation, because these skills of attunement helps us to discern when to act and when to wait and how to interpret our purpose. You know, I had a client who had a wonderful singing voice as a boy, a soprano voice, and then his voice changed, and then he, you know, was really clear that he was going to be a professional singer. But he was attached to something that wasn't going to happen for him, and he had to let it go and go in a different direction. And so that was his ego that was attached to it, you know. So the process of discerning accuracy, you know, what's wishful thinking versus destiny, I think that if you look at a life, you see there are certain events where you try to go down a certain path and there's a barrier that will not let you. Or another time when you're walking down a path and it's like all the doors open and you feel ushered. So it's really fun and interesting to discern these differences and to look at a life in retrospect about what aspects are destined and what aspects are directly related to our own attitudes and our own hard work.
Well, it seems like you point to this attunement, this higher self wisdom, the pineal gland connection, if you will, with the wisdom of our higher self. How does your life change when you flex that muscle, when you have a more consistent practice of tuning into that higher wisdom?
Well, it really is a wonder. you see, the process of navigating our world where there's a lot of confusion is really a challenge for all of us. We're bombarded with confusing messages and often very contrary to our spiritual nature. And so without deep focus and deep listening, it's very easy to become confused. So it's a way of accessing spirit and this deeper sense of purpose. You know, I mean, my life is an example in that I was raised by a professor, and when I had my spiritual awakening, I dropped out of college because that was what made sense to me, because I was being taught in ways that were magnificent, and I could never get that at a school or an institution. But, you know, the society said, you know, the people around me said, you won't be able to support yourself. And I said, well, we'll see.
Right, yeah.
And it's never been a problem. So the point is that when we listen to spirit, we listen to something deeper than our cultural conditioning.
It really seems like this next chapter of our human story, I mean, our cultures are really hungry for a new story, a new paradigm. We're really hungry for a better narrative of the possibilities for our future. And you keep pointing to kind of getting out of the gut and getting into that connection with your soul for that guidance. It's really kind of the core, perhaps, of what's going to fulfill that desire from the collective consciousness, from the collective culture's people are really hungry for something more authentic, more genuine in our in our storyline. And so I think what you're talking about here really relates from a personal point of view how each one of us can hone in, attune to that higher wisdom and start living our life from the inside out, perhaps. And when we do that, when we connect with that higher wisdom, it not only guides us through the, perhaps out of the chaos of the storyline, but it also, I think we show up in a much more powerful way as an individual. I mean, here you are, you're writing books about such fundamental aspects of how we connect with this higher wisdom. What would you, I mean, if you were to take a step back and look at this next chapter of our human story, what would you say are some of the key elements that will help turn humanity around?
Well, I think it's suffering. I think that we're in challenging times environmentally. We're in challenging times because on so many levels, our educational system, our political system, our relationship with nature, there's a myriad of challenges that we face. And when people are suffering, they start searching, and they start searching in areas that they wouldn't normally be looking because, you know, traditional allopathic medicine isn't working, because, you know, children are having a hard time. There's, you know, many, many problems. And so I really have found that, you know, when I started doing my work originally, so many years ago, the people I worked with were not so mainstream. But now I look at my classes and, you know, it's people from all walks of life, all economic backgrounds. And what everyone shares in common is a desire for deeper meaning and a desire to find lasting, sustainable solutions to problems that have caused turmoil and suffering.
So there's not just one thing, we can't take a pill and that fixes us for the rest of time? I mean, it's like an ongoing journey, is that what you're saying?
Well, it is an evolution. But, you know, I always say attunement is the only rule. And I love to quote my son. When he was in high school, he said, when you experience the human condition from the human perspective, it's a tragedy. And when you experience the human condition from the spiritual perspective, it's really interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
It adds a different dimension. And, you know, when my mother came back and talked to me after she died, she had a severe case of MS, and she came back to say that she had chosen a life of difficulty to learn compassion. And if you look deeply enough, you'll see there are always reasons, and there is justice. So it's, life is our school, and so often the learning hasn't happened, so the lessons have gotten harder, and this is going to facilitate a deeper search.
Well, that's what I like about your book, because it's, from my perspective, it's such a very grounded and personal sharing, if you will, of your journey, of your questioning of the nature of life. I mean, you look at these things of destiny and choice, of anxiety and focus, and it seems like a very well-written, comprehensive overall view, if you will, of what it means to be a human being, a guidebook for life here on Earth.
Yes, it's a cosmology based on my ability to converse with these magnificent teachers from the spiritual world. And, you know, I laugh when I say that because, you know, it sounds so odd. But when I knew that I had this clairvoyance and clairaudience, I had to ask myself, how do I want to use it? And I was interested in the deeper questions. I didn't so much want to give messages from dead relatives as I did want to talk to the masters, the teachers, the philosophers, so that I could have a better understanding. And also, I was so sensitive that it was hard for me to function. And by getting the tools for integration, I was able to move into a city where I had lived on a dead-end dirt road in the woods because of my sensitivity. And so I find that this integration of spirit and human can make us both sensitive and strong.
Well, I like that. Going from living at the end of a dead-end road in the country to living in the city, as a sensitive person, I would imagine that took a lot of discernment, if you will, about all the information coming to you. Because, I mean, when you're psychically sensitive like that, and then you go into a denser and denser population, you get so much information that may or may not be related to you, but nonetheless, through your sensitivity, it shows up on your radar. And then to turn around and work through all that and then bring some discernment and integration to that, to the point of writing such a well-spoken book, that sounds like a journey in and of itself.
Yes, it has been.
So what's next in your journey?
Well, I have a couple of other books in me that I'd like to get down on paper. One is A Framework for Wise Education, which is my understanding of the chakra system and how that applies to child development. And I also would like to write a book for children that mimics the information in A Framework for Wise Education, but in a story form. Because, you know, little children are so naturally clairvoyant and clairaudient. They have recently been in the spiritual world, and so they're quite connected. And it gets conditioned out of them, especially when they go to school. And it would be so great to help keep that alive for children so that the integration process is easier for them.
I like that. Well, so with your book, The Infinite View, who are you targeting as the reader of that book?
Well, of course, I like to think everyone. I have a student who gave a copy to her brother, who's a professor, at Princeton, and she said he was so embarrassed by the title that he took off the cover so that when he read it on the airplane, he wouldn't be embarrassed. And then he loved it. And then he bought copies for all the people closest to him in his life. So he had this concept that it was going to be sort of another eye-rolling New Age book.
Right.
But in fact, he was moved because it really is a story of direct experience. And at the beginning, I was skeptical, too.
Well, that's pretty telling for a professor to have a skeptical perspective of the book and then to turn around and come out in such favor of it to buy copies for your friends. I suggest a lot of our... The desire of our human nature is really you've hit the nail on the head with this book because you bring such a grounded perception of anxiety, of depression, of being confused and disconnected and learning how to hone into that higher wisdom within yourself. I would think people, like you said, the vast majority of humanity is hungry for that kind of a storyline. So I could very much see why you would find that people from all walks of life have such a resonance for the book.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. You've written books. When you write a book, it's kind of like putting a child out in the world, and you wonder where it's going to go and what it's going to do. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it has a life of its own, and it's still growing.
Well, we're getting towards the end of the show. I want to make sure our listeners know how to get your book. If you offer services to people, tell us how to connect with you, how your services are offered, for example, in person or online. I mean, just give us a real organic snapshot of your books and your services.
So I have a website, and it's simply ellentadd.com. And I do private work, and I do teaching. I'm going to be giving a lecture in California in January. I have a series of classes I teach. So I will be teaching in New York City at the end of March. So all this information is on my website. And my book, The Infinite View, is sold where books are sold. I feel very fortunate to have Penguin Random House as my publisher. So it should be available where books are sold as well as online. And it's philosophy and narrative, but it's also tools, and it's practical and gives people practical ways of helping to navigate the complexity of their lives.
And I mean, you said it right there, practical tools to navigate the complexity of their life. I would totally concur with that. I found the book very enjoyable to read. Your writing style is... It's such an easy read, but yet it's full of content and personal examples, examples of what the points you're trying to convey and how they have played out in your life. You really just you bring your points all the way through in such a graceful way. It's a very good read. I very much applaud you on your book.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's music
well,
to my ears.
Well, an hour goes by pretty fast. Do you have any closing thoughts you want to share with us?
I just want to remind everyone that we are all spirit temporarily on the earth, and the reason there are so many messages in religions that have a common theme is because we're more than just our brains and our biology, that we do have life before and after death. And so it's important to work through our fears why we're here so we can really enjoy the gift of life.
Well, very nice. Well, Ellen, I want to thank you for being our guest tonight on the show. It's been my pleasure having you.
Thank you, Les. Thank you for having your show and creating this wonderful forum.
We've been talking with Ellen Tad, and the topic tonight has been the title of her new book, The Infinite View, A Guidebook for Life on Earth. You know, our human soul, well, our soul, is this timeless attribute of ourselves. We don't have to fear our lives. We don't have to fear our essence, if you will. We have continuity. There's continuity to our life no matter what happens. The essence of us is safe. We are safe. And so often our ego can fret and worry about tomorrow. We can watch the news, we can watch the storyline from the media, and we can wring our hands and feel a sense of despair. But it's from a soul's perspective, there's no danger. I mean, we're literally going through such an advanced class of very diverse human dynamics. I mean, if you look at this planet, the storylines are just as broad and thick as you can possibly imagine. Every flavor of our human suffering seems to have been played out in spades over the years, but we're at a transition point. And I suggest you do not be afraid. Do not worry about the future. I don't care what you see in the headlines. I don't care what the headlines show us, what the media suggests that our future is going to be. I suggest the perception of your soul before you were even born understood every part of this paradigm playing out now. Your soul had the perspective to understand every part of this paradigm playing out now, and you have a purpose. You have a role, a component of the collective story. So show up for yourself. Show up for your life purpose. Teach your ego to not be afraid. Teach your ego to tune in to that higher wisdom within us. There is a path, period, end of story. There is a path. The future of humanity is assured on this planet. We've gone past the threshold of self-destruction. It's just not going to happen. So relax and take a deep breath and turn within and learn your role here. Hey, you know, it's my good pleasure to bring you episodes like this one. That's part of my life purpose. I'm your host, Les Jensen. Thanks for joining us in this episode. Until next time.
This has been a New Human Living Radio broadcast to bring your soul's inspiration into effect and live your life wide open. Check out our host, Les Jensen's latest book, Citizen King, The New Age of Power, at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.